This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. It's been a little while. I'm Jess Root, your host from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, as we are in the dead of the offseason. It's been a few weeks, Seth, but we do have content to talk about. It's episode 268. Nothing big is happening. Though in the offseason right now, we have had limited media access. It's been interesting in the fact that in this time of the pandemic where everything that that teams are doing is virtual and teams have been very good about scheduling press conferences, but it isn't quite the same because you're getting one guy a day, which is it's a little bit different. You get them for longer. A lot of teams, and I actually got a message from another reporter that I know from another market and kind of asking, hey, there's one player that we haven't heard from this offseason. That's Kyler Murray. Teams are protecting those quarterbacks. Jimmy Garoppolo hasn't spoken to reporters yet this offseason. It's been an interesting offseason, although at least we have the hope that the season will be coming. Fans or not, it feels like at least the NFL season is going to happen.
Yeah, it feels like there's going to be an NFL season, but already it seems like it's going to be without fans. And we'll get to that shortly, but it seems like it'll be either completely without fans or lowering the amount of fans available. It'll actually be, you know, as you kind of alluded to, it'll actually be interesting to see what they do from a media standpoint in terms of availability, access, and things of that nature. Especially if there is a second wave of the coronavirus that comes around, because I think then you almost have to quarantine the team away from any outside or teams from any outside type of fraternization, or however you say it, and so that way it's strictly, you know, announcers and team personnel and then the players, and so we'll see kind of how this goes. But I think we're hopeful that coming out of maybe training camps, we'll see maybe a light influx of fan availability, but I wouldn't hold my breath at this point.
And that's what we're going to kind of lead with in this show. The topics we have lined up in episode 268 is we're going to talk about what we've learned so far in the off season of virtual workouts. There is some news that just came down on Tuesday about training camps and with workouts, how it's going to affect things both from a fan perspective and from a media perspective in terms of the information. Not only just how Seth and I can do our jobs as analysts, but also how that affects the coverage of the team. We'll talk about the one roster move that we've had recently, the addition of a former Texas Tech Red Raider in Dylan Cantrell, former receiver converting to tight end. What does that mean? Patrick Peterson recently spoke to the media for almost nearly an hour. He talked about a ton of things, but we want to kind of zero in on a couple of topics, and that's him and his contract situation. And then some really, because he's doubled down on this, kind of the lofty expectations he has for this team. And we'll wrap up a topic that I know that a ton of fans have been talking about this offseason. It's that their uniforms. Do they need an update? What we think about the whole thing? And that's what's coming up on this show. Let's go ahead and get started talking about training camp news, virtual workouts. The news came down from a couple of places. I haven't seen the official notice from the NFL announcing to in NFL communications, but training camp this year for the Arizona Cardinals and the rest of the league is going to be different. Teams will not be traveling. So a lot of teams travel to different places, whether they have camp, like the Cardinals used to go up to Flagstaff, for example. Not all teams open up their practices for fans like the Cardinals do, but no team will be leaving their facility, and no team will have fans in attendance of training camp practices this year, as the league is requiring that teams hold their training camps in their team facilities. As fans, that's going to be disappointing, considering that here in Arizona, as an organization, they have always held to the idea of holding open training camps for the fans to get them excited for this season. My initial response to that is it makes complete sense in terms of how they're going to handle the off season. It's disappointing, I think, for some players. Like, a lot of teams travel to other facilities to do things. I know the Rams have gone up to, I think it's Cal Lutheran University in the past. But in the midst of this pandemic, where they're developing, they have some protocols in place for opening up the team facilities, they know that they're going to have their facilities under control for the sanitizing and cleaning protocols. If they were to open things up to other facilities, it would just open up the risk and kind of not be in line with everything that the decisions that have made so far. Were you surprised by the report that came out today?
No, I mean, it made sense. We were just kind of waiting to see what they were going to do, how they were going to figure this out, and, you know, what the plan was going to be. I think right now the idea that there's no fans or in light media, it kind of makes sense, and we'll see how that goes moving forward. But I think for now, you know, limiting the outside influences around the team is probably the best idea, at least for the beginning of this.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, what's going to change, though, is the fan experience, because if there's one thing that training camp, as a Cardinals fan ourselves, even before this has been, I've been doing this for a decade, I covered the team, that as a fan, I appreciated the coverage of the team during the time, because you're able to get insight in terms of practice. And one of the things is, when I am at training camp practices, you can see rotations, you can see depth chart type things. It's going to be interesting to see how coverage works. Will media be able to attend practices like they normally would? And if they're there, because walkthroughs have never been open, so media members can't comment or report things what they see in walkthroughs. Any practices that have been at facilities before, whether it's OTAs, mini camps, or their closed practices during training camp, reporters can't report, they can't tweet, they can't talk about things specifically that they see during the closed portion of practice. It's going to be interesting to see, because that's the kind of insight that I believe that the fans are going to miss out if these practices are open to media to be able to comment on, and we kind of see where people stand on the depth charts. This is kind of like the Damir Bird effect. We knew all through the and Keyshawn Johnson throughout training camp that Bird was getting first team reps regularly. Without that, you'd just, depending on how they handle the preseason reps, you wouldn't have any idea who the standouts are.
Yeah, and you know, you get the reasoning behind it, but at the same time, it creates a lot more unknown. And then you go into that first preseason game, and typically you see very little of the starters, if any. And so really you're only going to get, what, 2.5, maybe 3/4 of preseason play that you'll be able to kind of glean information from and make educated guesses on what's coming up for the team. And that, you know, it sucks because it just takes a little bit of the fun out of everything that you go through when it comes to your team.
Now, the other thing that's get in terms of everything this has had, this, I know in our group text, there was the joke that Cliff Kingsbury was a year too early to roll out his secret offense because he would have already had it under wraps this year. That aside, I think it's going to be beneficial because how the Cardinals have handled this offseason, because it's been so much virtual, they haven't been able to rep anything on the field yet. The Cardinals are going to be in a really good position because they have continuity in personnel, they have continuity in coaching, and scheme. And so, aside that they do have a handful of new pieces that they've added to the lineup, aside from the rookies, I think there's going to be in a situation where the Cardinals will be one of the teams in the NFL that will be affected the least by this whole virtual offseason.
Yeah, and that was something that we kind of talked about, and I mean, we'll get to it at the end too, but you know, a new signing and things like that. It seems like teams that had some cohesion and were able to kind of keep the core together would probably have the most success. So in March, when things went down when things started with the coronavirus, you and I talked about this, like they don't want to make sweeping changes along the offensive line. They don't want to have to teach new players all over the defense. So yeah, the defensive line is probably the most, or the defense itself is probably the most changed, but you're talking about a linebacker and a defensive lineman theoretically as being the two big changes. And so with that, you probably have no changes on offense outside of DeAndre Hopkins. And then you have Devondre Campbell and Jordan Phillips on defense. And that's really the changes of getting guys up to speed. And all of those guys are seasoned veterans that have, you know, had success in the NFL and kind of know systems in the NFL. I think you're right in the sense that you're going to have some problems, obviously, with the rookies, but I don't think it's going to be Cardinals centric. And so you'll have problems throughout the NFL. And so maybe the Cardinals draft this year is not very impactful, but maybe that's by design based on, you know, the idea of like, hey, we're going to have a really limited offseason and maybe even training camp and God forbid preseason. So let's have these veterans that have been there, done that, and then we can work these rookies in slowly where they won't have to immediately contribute or are expected to immediately contribute.
Well, when you look at the draft classes, aside from Isaiah Simmons, there's not a lot expected from any of them. And Simmons, as we've gone over before, he's going to have a real specific role. The good thing is, by all accounts, every guy that they drafted is an intelligent football player. So they drafted high IQ guys. Josh Jones doesn't have to start. If he starts, fantastic. They're two defensive linemen. I don't know. And Patrick Peterson, in one of the comments that he made, when you play defensive line in terms of scheme, your role, your impact is they're going to be rotational guys. And I'm supposing the defensive line is perhaps one of the simpler positions to plug and play because a lot of your role is occupy guys. And after that, you've got Evan Weaver. He's not going to be a defense. You're going to see him on special teams. You know, Benjamin, you're going to see him on special teams or maybe, a, you know, two or three snaps a game on offense. And so, yeah, they're really in a good position. I'm in terms of how things have gone this offseason, that makes – I don't know how many growing pains we're going to see from the Cardinals overall. The one thing about the offseason I'd kind of like to see is that we're still waiting on the three-day minicamp that teams are allowed to have. There's the belief that maybe it could happen later this month. But I would just – and honestly, I'm all for what Patrick Peterson said. Let's push that. So here in the next week or so, end the off-season program and then have the week before the training camp starts, they come back a week early and they have their mini camp then and then report to camp. And that way you've pushed this back as far as you go in terms of contact – and you still have everything on schedule.
Right. And I think that's the goal, is that you have this on schedule. You're able to, at least the practices and things upcoming, and you're able to get as much out of this as possible. You know, and the reality is, and I think you hit on it from, you know, the Cardinals-centric portion of this, which is what we do, they're in a spot where if their rookies are being asked to do a lot or play, hopefully it's because they're just that far along. I mean, obviously injuries occur, and that's maybe the scariest part of this, especially from a physical and conditioning standpoint. But hopefully the only way we see extensive amounts of Isaiah Simmons and Josh Jones this year will be if they are, in fact, you know, so good that they just can't keep them on the bench. And I think, you know, I think everybody would be happy as can be with that result.
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about their one new signing. I'll be honest, it was a surprise to see a roster move at this point in the offseason. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. I'm back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals added, and they have him listed as a tight end. That's Dylan Cantrell, former player for Cliff Kingsbury when he was at Texas Tech, when he was a receiver and drafted by the Chargers. He was out of the league last season, but spent some time on the practice squad on the active roster of the Chargers in 2018 after he was drafted in the sixth round. They bring him on. It's an interesting move, in my opinion, because of the time, just because of the timing. And I know that you had written on your site on Tuesday the potential that he has, that they might see another. They might see a little bit. Let's not go hyperbolic, but too hyperbolic on this. But George Kittle. Everyone's trying to find another George Kittle, the tight end. It's the matchup nightmare. What is there to know about Cantrell?
You know, I think it's one of those situations. You had really good reports coming out of Los Angeles or San Diego, whatever they were at the time that he was with the organization, about his work in training camp with the preseason. But he's had injury issues, and that is always, you know, an issue, a concern. He put on weight coming out of Texas Tech. Talk, you know, that he was kind of the big receiver in Cliff Kingsbury offense. And so he's a guy that, you know, has good hands. He's kind of a possession guy. You know, you look at his numbers. His junior year, he had 58 catches for 675 yards. And then his senior year, he had 71 catches for 816 yards. So those aren't, I mean, nothing huge. But he had 15 touchdowns in those 2 years. So maybe a little closer to what they were hoping to get out of Charles Clay, that they were, you know, that they never got out of him. Obviously, that's still a high bar and hopefulness for him to get to. But, you know, I read that they list him closer to 240 now. Is that, yes, is that what they're listening
at? 240 is what they list him at now.
Yeah. And so, I mean, from an athletic profile, it's, that's a really interesting, if he truly, I mean, we'll never know at this point if he is, you know, 240, but a 4.59, 40 is obviously really good. And he has really good jumps. So an agility score. So, you know, I think the, and one of my guys wrote about this a little bit today. I think the hope is that he can give you similar traits to George Kittle. And let's not forget, and this isn't to say that he'll ever get there, ever, because that is completely unfair to ask. Yeah. To ask a guy that wasn't, you know, that's never even played in the NFL to be on the level as an all pro. However, Kittle was a fifth round pick. So it's not like he was, you know, a top, even a top 100 guy. So it, while it is very unlikely that we'll see Dylan Cantrell ever reach those heights, there, that might be something where you're looking for a guy that's similar to, oh, who's the kid in Seattle that they have? Oh, goodness.
Hollister?
Like, yeah, like a Jacob Hollister, or maybe even a Will Disley type,
yeah,
who was putting up really good numbers and then got hurt. You know, that, but from a physical, just pure build standpoint, you know, you look at Cantrell, and he's got, again, just from a athletic profile, this similar to George Kittle. And so maybe you get something like a Jacob Hollister out of him, and he's a, you know, cheap kind of guy that knows Cliff's system. Hey, what we were going to talk about, right? Like, he's like, he knows Cliff's system already. Okay. That makes it a little, that makes sense. Right. Let's bring in somebody that knows what the system is. And even if he hasn't played the position, he knows the calls. He knows, you know, so all he's going to have to do is learn the routes from that new position, as opposed to learning terminology and all of that. So I think it's a fine signing for this time of year. I think for the position, it's a fine signing. And for the fact that obviously the Cardinals and the rest of the NFL are in a very odd space, it makes a lot of sense to grab somebody that maybe has a little upside that you'd be able to, that you don't have to worry about the mental portion of things.
Right. For me, I never get too excited about guys like this. I feel like we see these converted tight ends almost every year. Let's kind of go back in the history that we've seen. So just a few years back, Ifeanyi Moma. Even if you want to go with Darren Fells. Now, Darren Fells has carved out a mighty fine NFL career. Nothing fantastic, but former football player, goes to the NFL and has himself an NFL career. So that's in itself. But Ifeanyi Moma, he was nice on special teams, not much to talk about. Ricky Seals-Jones didn't become, he's still in the league, but he didn't become anything with the Cardinals. You go with Darrell Daniels, who they have on their roster now. The kid, I can't remember the name of the kid they also had brought up late a couple years ago as well. And Dan Arnold, whom they picked up last year, a different profile. He's, you know, because he's super tall, 6'6", but a lean 220. And so it's kind of like, I feel, because we understand that tight end And you get the more we see out of this, what we're starting to see is that I believe they're moving away from that double tight end. Well, that's what they did a lot of late last year for the running game. Look at the personnel. They've got one legitimate NFL tight end on their roster in terms of full range of skills, and that's Max Williams. Charles Clay they want to have back, but I think that kind of closes the... I think this might be a move to let... No, they're probably moving on from Clay unless something happens in the preseason. They can just plug him back in. They got a couple undrafted kids that kind of fit the physical profile of the... But after that, you've got converted receivers who are more receivers than anything else. So I think we can kind of look at the offense and see it evolving to be more what Cliff envisioned, but moved away from because the running game was what was being successful. But I don't expect much for Cantrell. If he makes the roster, fine. They still have, you still got Max Williams, who's your primary tight end, and then I think everyone after that is going to be a rotational specific role guy.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the best you can hope for a guy like this, especially this early. I mean, he's still young, so if he's just a kind of a end of the roster body H-back type this year, and then they are able to develop him, I think that's kind of what you maybe hope for in the best case for a guy like this. I don't think, at all that it's guaranteed, but I think that's kind of the hope for a guy like this over expecting him to be anything more. I think it would be unfair and unrealistic for, again, he's had really nice training camps and preseasons and never played in an NFL game because of injury issues.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to something more recent. We've heard from Patrick Peterson, and let's talk about the contract situation since it appears that talks have slowed, but he's gearing for a big, big year. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Patrick Peterson says that talks have kind of slowed, so there is not much going on in terms of a contract extension, even though an extension for Peterson would give them more cap flexibility this year. He is on the last year of his deal, and oh my goodness, the way you listen to Patrick Peterson, he's expecting to have a big season this coming year as he enters the second year of the Vance Joseph defense. He's got big things. I mean, here's the thing for me. The question comes down to, should the Cardinals extend him? What price? And if has a good season, should we be willing to pay him the premium that he's going to want, because he even used the phrase make things right and keep him here for the rest of his career. It's kind of an interesting, because Pat says things in a way publicly, he's very likable, but you can tell he's not looking to get a reasonable end of career contract. I think he's still looking for premium cornerback money. What's your take on that situation?
I mean, you can want in one hand, in the other, and that's kind of where that goes to there, because the reality is that the cornerback market is, it's hard to see anybody being willing to pay him that type of money when the biggest contract this year was Byron Jones, and that was a massive contract, 5 years, $82.5 million. Then the next closest guy and we could just lump them in together, guys were James Bradberry and Trey Waynes, both much younger, 27 for Bradberry, 28 for Waynes. And they both got 3-year contracts, about 14 and a half million. So unless he's okay with that type of money, I would expect that's going to be his market, whether it's the Cardinals or anywhere else, at least in my opinion, because I don't see a Byron Jones type contract for a 30-year-old corner. I mean, I don't see it being plausible for any team to being able to pay him 5 years, $82.5 million. It just, I mean, he'll be 30 this year. So that means you're signing him to a contract. If it's not the Cardinals and you're not resigning him, if you sign him to a Byron Jones type contract, that means he'll be 31 when the contract starts. And that just seems, it just doesn't seem like it's a plausibility.
Right. And that's going to be the interesting thing. I am all for giving a contract extension. I know there's a lot of fans, and maybe it's fair at this point because of, one, the trade request. So obviously he wasn't happy, and that he kind of burned some bridges there. Two, the suspension. Three, the tiff with the front office about not working with his contract on that suspension. And then, let's be honest, his play after his suspension was not good. And he kind of turned things around towards the end of the year, lending itself. And he said it himself. He was learning the system. His mind wasn't clear. There was a lot on his plate. And this is very interesting. Is like there was some stuff to dig into that we didn't dig into in that press conference. Is when he says when he talked about 2019, there was the suspension and a lot of distractions and a lot on his plate. I'm kind of interested as to what that was. Maybe was it the tiff with management? Were there other things as well that were weighing on him that led to, and I get the time off, he basically didn't have any real football for nearly 3 months. And so it makes sense that there were some struggles, but it was like struggle in a new system. I trust, like, I'm going to be optimistic, give the guy the benefit of the doubt. We've seen his play throughout his career at a high level, and we saw it late in the year. I'd be willing to bet on him. I wouldn't obviously give him Byron Jones money, but if we're looking at the, what's he due to make? I think $12 million this year. If he's looking to make that much money, you know, 3-4 years, $12 to $15 million, I think you can look at him physically and you look at his track record, the fact that he has a goal to be a Hall of Famer. He's on track for that if he can revert. So 2018, 2019 aside, he's on track for that. And the truth is, you still need a guy like him, but you do want to see him develop a little bit more, because one of the comments that he made is, you know, he will lock up any receiver on the outside. Doesn't matter who it is. He will win most of those battles. Can he adapt to the offenses in the NFL that any time you don't have a premier outside receiver, he has to run through traffic, which minimizes his ability.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things that you're seeing now, is that you're seeing these guys in terms of corners be a little more flexible and diverse in their ability to cover. You know, and you look at a guy like Richard Sherman, obviously Pat will be coming off, hopefully, a gruesome injury. You know, we hope that. But Sherman took a 3-year, $27 million deal that was worth up to, a lot more. And the question becomes, does Pat have that kind of belief in himself that we have seen consistently that Richard Sherman just truly does have? I mean, he doesn't just have a belief in himself. He has maybe a little over the top, bravado about him. And, you know, when you look at that, I don't know what Pat, I think that's my biggest thing. I agree with you. Like, his goals, even if they are in a selfish manner of wanting to be a Hall of Famer, they do in the end, you know, go to the team and, or the idea of the team being good enough or him playing at a high level. But at the same time, you know, you'd hope that he sees what is going on with a guy like Sherman, you know, maybe a guy, obviously this is always the go-to example and it's extreme, but a guy like what Tom Brady did in New England for so long, willingly giving, you know, knowing that he's not getting as much money as he could at the benefit of the rest of the team. That's what the question becomes for Patrick is how intense is his team-led goal and how much does it match up with his personal goal that undoubtedly will benefit the team if he reaches all of his goals, but you'd still like to see him not looking at being the highest paid corner in the NFL or even, to be completely fair, near that. I mean, you'd like to see him be okay with, okay, hey, at my age, I'm good with being a, you know, top 15 paid corner in the NFL, because that's still probably, what, 12 plus million a year?
It should be, yeah.
And so, you know, maybe you're getting a 3-year, $40 million deal. And with incentives, it can go up to 50, you know, and I'm just spitballing. I don't even know numbers, but.
Well, and it's the other interesting thing is that teams are, we see it across the league, these contract extensions aren't coming right now because of the financial outlook is, you know, if the NFL is going to play this season with no fans, that's going to hurt the bottom line for players moving forward because it means a drop in the salary cap, which could be significant unless there is, if there are concessions this year. So either, now if fans can make it back into the stadiums, it's fantastic. But it's going to be interesting because Patrick said, once the season starts, that's not the time to talk contract, which means the Cardinals will then be under pressure after the season to either get a deal done, put the tag on him, or allow him to move on and hope for the best after that. Personally, I'm okay with locking him up at the right price. I'm not saying he has to take a steep discount, still pay him like one of the better ones, but I can understand why the Cardinals are playing wait and see right now because of the financials moving forward. They have their eyes on a championship window and they don't want to lock themselves in a situation that's going to hurt themselves with the cap because this offseason they are stuck at the cap. They really can't do anything else.
Right. And I mean, you know, you have to look no further than your own division for what happens when you over invest in terms of your guys. And you can look at the Rams, you can look at the Seahawks. Both of those teams chose poorly the guys that they were going to overpay or be loyal to, I guess is the better term. And now they're both kind of in this mishmash of salary cap hell. And you just, you know, you don't want the Cardinals to be there because they've never really been a team that has the ability to go get the one guy. You know, obviously, Steve Keim has done, I mean, nobody will deny this, that Steve Keim has done brilliant work in getting, you know, Chandler Jones and DeAndre Hopkins. But when it comes to free agency, they're typically shopping in the second tier bin. And you and I have talked about this. That's the bin you want to shop in, but you want to shop in that because you've got your first tier guys. And so the question becomes is, you know, would a re-signing of Peterson be more of a Tyrann Mathieu, David Johnson? And yes, I know those guys were injured. I'm not talking about that portion of it. I'm just talking about play living up to pay. Or would it be more of, you know, not signing him, be more of like the Calais Campbell, where it was like, wow, we messed that up big time. And so those, that's the question, because in the same way, you don't have, you're almost in the same spot where you were with Calais, where you don't have a guy that has shown that you can move on from him. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. If Byron Murphy had played extremely well last year, not even, you know, all rookie or, you know, Pro Bowl type numbers, but if he had shown that he was a guy that was a top, you know, 20 to 25 corner in the NFL, I think you as an organization have a lot more flexibility. I think the fact that you really, I mean, outside of Patrick, you don't know what you have at corners, whether it be Robert Alford or Byron Murphy. And so while, yes, you've invested in the position, it's hard for me to ever advocate turning away the best player on your team at his position. And that's, you know, that's just the reality of where the team is right now. So I'm with you. Like, if you're able to do it and get it done and it makes sense for the Cardinals, but I also don't think that they can be so stubborn that if he has a great year, let's say he's back to, you know, all pro level, and he wants that Byron Jones type money, I don't know if you can afford to not sign him to it either, because you just don't have anything there to replace him with.
Right. And if especially because if he has a great year, that means the defense is probably going to have a good year, which means you continue to have continuity of Vance Joseph. And he's a critical part to a championship team.
Well, and I think that's a great point that you just made. If you are improved, and that, you know, that includes him, you can't afford, like, you can't afford to take a step back because you're saying, oh, well, we want to bring on somebody else. Like, you just, if things are getting better, you don't want to screw that up. And I think, yeah, that's a really good point, Jess.
Now, coming out to the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talking about, we've got some more about what Patrick said, and that is dealing with expectations for what the potential this team is. That's kind of next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. And Patrick Peterson has not been shy about what he thinks about this Cardinals roster. Now, across the board nationally, the Cardinals are viewed as a sleeper team, but most picture them winning between 7 and 9 games. We fall into that same category. But Patrick, on a Hyper Ice podcast recently, said this is on paper the best team he has had, the best team he's been on. And he talked about it again when he spoke to reporters. He went down in depth of basically how there are the personnel that they have is a championship caliber team. Now, I'm going to say one thing. So I'm all about this because it gives us great content to talk about. I don't think anyone is really taking him seriously as this is a Super Bowl contender. I know that there are some people in the media nationally who kind of like that the Cardinals could be sneaky good this year. They could be sneaking good. It's gonna come down to a number of things. Kyler Murray becoming a star, first and foremost. They staying healthy and the defense not being terrible. That said, the one thing that I really like about this, and it's what I feel is true, that talent on the roster no longer appears to be the thing that's holding back this team. With what they did in the offseason, so offensively, they're in a good place. They added DeAndre Hopkins. They re-signed Kenyon Drake. You've got Kyler Murray. You've got continuity on the offensive line. And defensively, you have improved things to where you really look set, to where there's no real talent deficiency at any position group. And so in this, I will say, it's refreshing at this point to see that if the Cardinals do not reach their ultimate goal, talent will not have been the problem. And this is what I am most excited about. But what's your take? What do you think about Patrick coming out very publicly instead of saying, let's prove it? I think we've got something like, this is a championship caliber roster. I don't mind players saying that, especially when, if you look at it, if you looked at that roster, you could win a championship with that roster, in my opinion. It just you just need everything going right. What do you think about his declaring that?
You know, I wrote about the DeAndre Hopkins talk the other day, where he was asked if he was the. I think the question was, who's the best receiver in the NFL, or are you the best receiver in the NFL? Something along those lines. And DeAndre Hopkins said, I am. And then he was very courteous and went on to describe, you know, Michael Thomas's situation, Julio Jones's situation, all of that. And I know we're talking about Patrick, but Hopkins was prompted with a question and gave an answer. Whereas I think you're kind of right on the money of, like, Patrick is talking to talk sometimes. I think he's excited, and so that excitement goes into over exuberance at times, which isn't a bad thing. I don't think it's bad to have those visions of grandeur, but I think it's also good to understand that you're in year two, you have a second year quarterback. You've still got, you know, like you said, the roster is much improved on paper, but you still have lingering questions about the health of the offensive line and the defensive coordinator's ability to pull the defense up. So I think championship caliber, high-end expectations are fine, and I think being excited about your team is fine, but I like kind of the DeAndre Hopkins manner of, like, you're asking me a question, I'm telling you an answer, and I'm going to back up my answer with what I've done on the field. Whereas, as we just discussed, maybe Patrick hasn't had the best 12 months, you know, of his career, and that you definitely are fine with him saying, hey, like we said, this is a better, more talented roster on paper, but we've got a lot to prove, you know, but we feel like we're building in the right direction. It's fine. I don't know how I feel about the slightly over the top version of it.
Yeah. As he was, he laid the expectation. They've got to prove it. But I think what I like about what he said is that he praised the team for what he praised the front office, Steve Keim, for the roster that put it together, basically saying, hey, they did their job. It's time to do ours, and we've got to come together. All this is at the same time, you know, he seems to be the and I know this is there's partially this is because he's in a contract. He's in the last year of his deal with the Cardinals. It's his 10th year in the league. And so I know he's trying to push that agenda on the players. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just, I know locally there's a couple of guys like Dan Bickley said it's hollow leadership in his opinion. I think it's also trying to, it's the kind of concept of speak it into existence so that they don't have to overcome that belief later. It's like, let's build the belief that we can do it now and build it up. I love it.
I love it personally. And I'm fine with that ideal. I truly am, because I think like you said, setting high expectations is fine, but my problem is, and I'm not as far to Bickley's side, but my problem is that, again, I need Patrick to back it up before he's lavishing this praise on the team. And that's not even a shot at the team. It's more of like, hey, you need to, you know, if you're coming off your third straight all pro season and with this team, and you're saying this, I'd feel a lot better than coming off what was, you know, unquestionably your worst season as a pro.
Right. And on a team that hasn't been over 500 in four seasons, like, if you go back, yeah, you've brought it up. 2016, they weren't over 400, over 500. 2017, they never were over 500. 2018, obviously, it was a disaster that it was. And last year, the same thing. They literally have not been over 500 in more than four seasons. And so to come out and say this is a championship caliber roster, I mean, it's fun. I love it. I'm, as a fan, it gets me excited. But on the base of it all, just the part I appreciate the most is that if you break down what he's saying, is that at least it looks like talent wise they're in the right spot as opposed to years past when you knew they were talent deficient and you were hoping for you were praying and hoping and just. Being overly, you would have to be overly positive and homerish to think that they were going to truly contend when there were talent deficiencies. And so I love it. It's perfect. And it gives us something to talk about in this off season. It's been a mess. And as much as I know what's going on in the world between the pandemic and a lot of the strife in our nation right now, when it comes to football, It allows me to just deal with football and the Cardinals. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to talk about one other topic, and that's uniforms. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk. I know this has been a hot topic for many fans all offseason who have been begging and begging and begging for an update to the uniforms that the Cardinals have. There would be some timeliness to it. This will be the 100th anniversary of their establishment in the NFL in 2020. The Cardinals were founded in 1920. You've got a young team. You've got some excitement. They've had the same uniforms for quite a while. USA Today's Nate Davis, power rankings of uniforms in the NFL. The Cardinals were second to last. Now, I'm an old man at this point. Uniforms are something that don't matter a whole lot to me. And personally, I like the look. But I know that fans want new uniforms. And I'm kind of puzzled. Like, why haven't they done it? What's your take on the uniforms? I've got my thoughts on mine. What are your thoughts on what the uniforms are right now? And would you do them? And what would you do about them?
I think there's a lot of interesting designs out there. I'm a minimalist. I mean, it's weird. My taste in jerseys are either minimal. Think Oklahoma Sooners, Alabama, very, you know, little detail. Or I want something that is at least a statement. Arizona State's, I think it's their gray jerseys. They have like a gray jersey with
anthracites. Yeah, they've got a couple of them.
Yeah, and so, you know, with that kind of the flag imprint on the breastplate area, but it's not colored or anything like things like that. I'm not a fan of the Atlanta jersey. I think it's a little too much trying to be hip with the kids, so to speak. If they did away with like the ATL, I'm not a huge big block letter fan either. Like what we saw with Tampa Bay that they've done away with. So even the Rams jerseys, I don't mind the white ones, but the just kind of cartoonishness of them, even though they are simple, they're a little cartoony. So that's the thing, is like, we've seen a lot of new jerseys and a lot of them have been really bad. So while the Cardinals jerseys are definitely outdated, I would be in favor of maybe something similar to what we see with like the Sooners jerseys. I know the red's a little bit different, or, you know, Ohio State, or, you know, something that's very classic, very traditional, but, you know, can have a little maybe of that Arizona yellow flag type thing too in it as well. I'd like to see the jerseys change just because they are old and stagnant, but I'm not of the opinion that they need to be radical in any way.
Right. Now, for me, I like the uniforms as they are. I have a couple of minor complaints overall about their alternatives. I like the whites and I like the reds. I have zero problem. And I'll be like, I love Arizona. So I want to make this very clear to you listeners. I love Arizona. This has been the only state in which I've lived my entire life. I love Arizona. I personally don't get why people want the state flag on it. The state flag doesn't look anything at all like what, like, the state flag is fine. I don't need that on the jerseys, because look at that. It has nothing to do with Cardinals colors, and we know it's an Arizona team. I didn't like, honestly, when they updated the uniforms, when I look back at old pictures of the uniforms that they were using before, I love what they have now. I like the style of the numbering. I don't have a problem at all. I like the red. I like the white. I love the black. They're regular black. I have one complaint about that, and as for TV only, I don't think there's enough red. They have got the little red trim on the black uniforms, but on television you can't see them at all. So it looks like you just got like black and white players on the field on a color television. And I know that there's a lot to be said about the helmets. Most fans, I think, they dislike the helmets the most. I've got no problem with the helmets. A traditional white helmet with the Cardinal on the side, I'm good with that. And the Color Rush uniforms, that they're other alternative black, I love them as a fan. But the numbering, so when I go to my media job, if I'm in the press box, it's really hard with the red letters without a solid white outline, a clear outline. It's really hard to read the numbers from the press box. So that's just a whiny media guy or my reporter complaint. I don't need to see an update in the uniforms because, you know, being at the stage I am in my life, I'm kind of starting to reach the old fuddy-duddy. I'm the curmudgeon, the get off my lawn point of my in my life. The more new jerseys I see, the more often than not, I'm like, I don't like them. I do like what ASU's done with theirs, and I honestly the Rams uniforms that they changed, I prefer their uniforms a year ago that they were kind of throwback. I loved those. Those are actually really, really good. Outside of that, kind of like, I'm not much of a jersey guy. I like them, and then when they change it to something, I typically tend to like them more. The Diamondbacks, when they changed from the purple and they went to the Sedona red, I look back at those old pictures like, oh, those are the old ones. I didn't like at all. I like the newer ones they have. I loved the dark grays that they had up until the changes for this coming year that hopefully happens. I don't need new uniforms. Uniforms are not that important to me, but I'm an old guy now, so that's a new jerseys tend to be a young person thing, and I've resigned to the fact that I'm not in touch with that group of fans anymore.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the problem is that you have fans probably my age and up that, like you said, there's little care about the actual jerseys. But then you have my kids who, and I'm sure your kids are the same. They want the new jerseys. They want the cool graphics. They want all that stuff. And so I think that's the thing is, you know, you and I are not going to buy jerseys unless they're for our kids, and we're definitely going to buy jerseys. New jerseys for our kids, even if we don't like them.
It's true. So yeah, with that, new jerseys, whatever, I'll make it clear, based on anything that I've heard, there are no plans to update those jerseys. I think in a way that is a Bidwill Pant family thing. There's a reason why they are still the Cardinals, even though they moved from St. Louis to Phoenix, that they like the team name. It took them a really long time to change the logo to something from the not very fearsome Cardinal to a much more modern looking Cardinal look last, you know, a while, long time ago. And I think they, as a family, as an organization, they value tradition in looks over innovation, if you want to go with that. I can see how they might, but it is, yeah, I can understand why Cardinals fans who have been begging for uniforms see seven other teams this offseason make updates and feel like they're being left out. But in their defense, chances are many people wouldn't like any new updates anyway. So with that, let's wrap up this show. I'm not sure where we're going to, we'll give it a couple weeks at least. We'll just, when we come back, I know we've still kind of got going to go around the division for one of our shows. We'll do our rankings for positions and things as we kind of get closer to the season and before training camp. So enjoy this show. We'll be back in a couple, 3 weeks, I'm guessing. But until then, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. And we will have a show, just not next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red. Run!